back. And I'm running a little bit behind schedule because when you're talking to Neela Schwartzberg, you're talking to Neela. And it's always easy to get away, and it's lots of fun. Anyway, we have travel journalist Peter Flaherty. He is now joining us with his Destination Worldview report. And today we're going to speak with him about the level of experience in Naples, Italy. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Roy.
How are you this morning?
Great. I guess I should say buongiorno.
Ah, buongiorno is right. Buongiorno.
We're going to Napoli today.
Yeah, we have... Mike Trapani sitting here with us running aboard, and he's an Italiano.
Right.
He's from Trapani, which is obviously a small place in Italy.
Right, in Sicily, I believe.
Yep, that's exactly where it is.
A little further south from Naples.
Yep. Now, what do you mean by the levels of experience in Naples? Let's start with that, if you will.
Well, I guess I mean two things. Like many places in Europe, there are so many levels of history and culture that you can experience in Naples, and I think Naples is particularly rich in that respect because it's been such an important city and been ruled by so many different people over such a long period of time. But what I also mean by it is the experiences that you're going to experience as a traveler when you go there. It's a city that can be challenging. It can be difficult, and for many people, it's not a popular destination in Italy compared to, you know, the big three, say Rome, Florence, and Venice. But
right.
I think if you let yourself be open to the experiences, you'll have a whole range from frustration to euphoria. And believe me, Roy, when I was there, I went through the whole gamut of them.
Yeah, I can understand. I've been to Naples, but you started out your trip in Florence, looking at your article here, and when you asked about, we're thinking of going to Naples, you didn't get very positive responses, it seems.
No, and that's not at all surprising. You know, Italy is a country where, like the United States, where there's a real deep north-south divide, and people in the north have their opinions about the southerners and vice versa. And for many Italians, particularly in the north, Naples is not a city that they can imagine anyone really wanting to spend a lot of time in because of its reputation. There was a lot of problems with crime and poverty there for many years, and neglect of the city by all three levels of government, local, you know, provincial and federal. But I have to say that in the last, certainly when I was there, and I think for quite a few years before, really beginning in the 90s, they've made a big effort to turn it around, and they have so much to offer. It really is a very, you know, very worthwhile place to visit.
And I think, as you say, the reputation goes back from years ago when it just wasn't, nobody was, you know, taking care of the store. That's basically what
That's
it amounted
right.
to.
Mm-hmm. Well, that has changed.
You took the train there,
mm-hmm.
and it was the rainy time, which was not always fun.
It was unfortunate that, you know, it certainly wasn't sunny Napoli. We just had bad luck weather-wise. It was in October, which is generally a good month, but it was pretty cloudy and rainy for most of the time. As I said at the end of the article, the one point when the sun broke through the clouds, it gave us a spectacular view of the whole bay, which is really, you know, Naples is famous for the bay. It's probably one of the most beautiful seaside cities in the world. But that was that little glimpse of the sun really made the trip. And it
right.
more than made up for a lot of the frustrations we'd experienced on the way, too.
Right. And at some point during this, I always like to stop for a moment and remind our audience that they can go to the website at www.ttrn.com, click on Destination Worldview, and Peter's article and photographs, which are really quite interesting, are up there, and you can follow that as we chat here. Now, so you get off the train, and you end up, at the Hotel Bellini. Was that
right? Really, your first introduction, if you're coming into Naples by train, is the central station, or the Stazione Centrale, which is, it's a pretty intimidating place. You get off the train and you're confronted with this huge Piazza Garibaldi, which is sort of a big square with lots of cars and traffic and motorcycles. The Vespas are infamous in Naples. You really have to watch your, when you're walking, you have to be your eyes in the back of your head all the time. So it's not the most attractive entry point into the city, and our hotel was right in the, we chose to stay right smack dab in the old central historic district of Naples known as Spacca Napoli, which for many people, quite frankly, would probably look more like a slum than a historic neighborhood, but
right.
it's actually both, and we decided to walk there, and that was an experience in itself, trying to find our way through the little narrow streets. And when we did get to the hotel, I have to say, you know, first impressions were not that great, but Naples is a city that grows on you if you let it. And the neighborhood we stayed in, which at first seemed a little bit run down, well, quite frankly, more than a little bit, it became our home for the days we were there. The people were very friendly, and we went from there to explore all of the interesting places in the old town, and lots of fabulous churches and old buildings, tremendous little cafes and restaurants. So it was, the introduction was not great, but the city certainly, like fine wine, it improved with age the longer we
stayed. It's fine to have first impressions, but don't stay with them.
Exactly.
It brings up the question is, why was Naples such an important and historic city in Europe?
Well, for many years, it rivaled London and Paris. It was one of the largest cities in Europe. It was, its history is so complex, and even though I'm a history teacher, I'm not going to try and cover, every single century, but I suppose it reached its high point when it was the Kingdom of Naples in the 18th century, ruled by a branch of the Spanish Bourbon family, who gave their name to the fabulous whiskey. But it became a very important cultural center. It was a powerful city in southern Italy. It was a magnet for attracting, gentlemen on the grand tour of Europe for many reasons, some of them good, some of them maybe not so good. But after at that high point, when Italy became a united nation in the 19th century, it really kind of declined after that. And many Neapolitans were quite, they had their nose out of joint that Rome was chosen as the capital and not Naples. Historically, Naples had been a much bigger, a much more thriving and important city in many respects, culturally, etc. So, it has a tremendous history and pride, but a kind of faded grandeur now, I guess you could say.
Now, you went to the National Archaeological Museum.
Right. It's one of the best in Europe. I have a real interest in classical, Greco-Roman history and archaeology. And what they've done is they've taken a lot of the fabulous paintings and mosaics and things from Pompeii, which is very close. They've taken them there to protect them inside, because otherwise they'd be exposed to the elements. And they have a fabulous collection of statues and sculptures. And it's really, I've been to many museums in Rome and other places, but I have to say that the one in Naples is certainly the best, and there are many interesting things to see there, including the rather notorious Gabinetto Secreto, which I mentioned in the article. That's only been open to the public in just for the last few years. It basically is an erotica collection.
Oh, this is the one from Pompeii. Yeah, okay.
Right. Yeah, they have a lot of interesting things there, and I wouldn't suggest it for family viewing, but for those of you who have a sort of more broad-minded approach and are interested in how the ancient people viewed matters sexual, it's not tasteless. I suppose you could call some of it pornography in a way, but when it's ancient, it becomes sort of more cultural and historical, and you can view it. Now, for many years, it was off limits to all but the most serious researchers, but the last few years, they've opened it up to the general public, and they do recommend that, parental guidance.
Right. But other than the Pompeii, other than Pompeii, I think, the sculptures during those periods were pretty graphic in the first place, weren't they?
Yeah.
Pompeii I found very interesting. I was there in the 50s when they were just discovering some of these frescoes and things, but it was a way of life, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. A different way of life, but I suppose, in some respects, but as I say, go with an open mind, and I think some of the things are really more amusing than seen. So it's worth seeing, definitely. And you might want to have a little glass of wine or a coffee afterwards. You might need something strong. Who knows?
Now, why are the Napolitans such a distinct group of people in Italy? Is one of the questions.
Ask any Italian, and you'll get a number of different answers. I would say that a lot of the stereotypes that we have in North America of Italians, of being a very outgoing, passionate people, and loving pizza and wine and coffee and bursting into song. I mean, these are stereotypes, right? They're largely from Naples. The Neapolitan people, I think, have given us our North American image of the Italian in many
ways. Well, even the North American Italians, if you talk to them, where are you from? I'm a Napolitano, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, because of the poverty and the decline of the city, in the unification of Italy, more people were leaving Naples, certainly, than going to it. And many Italians and people of Italian descent in the U.S. and Canada can trace their ancestry back to Naples, and they're very proud of it for many reasons. Pizza alone, It's one of the most popular foods in the world, and Naples invented it, you know.
You mentioned here, see Naples, then die, which is a famous Italian saying. I guess after you've seen that, there's no reason to live.
There's not much more to see, according to that. That's right. Which is, maybe like all exaggerations, it probably does contain a grain of truth. It's such a beautiful spot. But then the next one I add is see Naples, then run,
right.
Which is a rather cynical, more critical Italian view. Like, you don't want to get too close to it. And then I think the third quote I had was Naples is a paradise inhabited by devils, which it's an overstatement, but the Neapolitans can sometimes be a little bit brusque and a little bit rude. And this is a city that I wouldn't advise the first time traveler to Italy to take on right away. I think for more seasoned travelers who are prepared to sort of allow themselves to open up to the experience of being in a place that's a real city and that has an attitude, but has a tremendous amount to offer too. I think if you go with that kind of viewpoint, you won't be disappointed.
And there's the music, there's the food, there's the culture. And how should the potential visitor approach Naples in kind of your survival guide?
Well, I think I'd do a few things differently next time. I mean, you can't always count on the weather, but I would really like to see it when the sun is shining. I'd probably stay in a somewhat more not upscale hotel, but something maybe a little bit. There are many parts. I mean, if you were to go there and think that Spacca Napoli, which is this old historic center / slum, is all of Naples, which we did at first, you don't realize that there are many other much more beautiful and attractive neighborhoods. Probably stay in a different area. I don't know if I'd come in by train, or if I did, I might take a taxi. You've got to be a little careful because people in Naples, they've got a kind of a sharp eye to taking advantage of the tourists sometimes. So make sure that you settle on the fare before you get in the cab and count your change after you've paid the driver. But I think if having been there once, I certainly know the things I wouldn't do. But I also know that most of what I did there I would love to do again. And there are so many things I didn't get to see last time in Naples and the area around it. I mean, there are many beautiful places, the Amalfi Coast and the islands of Capri, which we tend to mispronounce Capri, and Ischia, and there's lots to see in the surrounding area that we didn't really bother to go to because the weather was so discouraging. But if it were sunny, I'd get out into the countryside. The coast is beautiful. Pompeii and Herculaneum are very close by, and there's just so much to see. I'd go back and, if I had a chance, and spend even a longer time there just to explore the city and everything around it.
And there were two things that you did enjoy. One was the coffee, and the other was the pizza.
Definitely. And don't forget the seafood, too.
Right.
I'm a fan of Italian coffee, but the Neapolitan claim, with some justification, I think, from the sampling I've done in other parts of Italy, that their espresso and their cappuccino is really the best. They make it on the old-fashioned 50s-style cappuccino machines, and you can get excellent coffee in just about any little bar or cafe in the city. The pizza, look for signs that say Vera Pizza Napolitana, which means real, authentic Italian or Neapolitan pizza.
Right.
The margherita pizza, which you don't get a lot of varieties there. We in North America tend to like to put lots of things on our pizzas there. It's pretty old school, and the margherita, which has the colors of the Italian flag, as I mentioned in the article, red, white, and green. It's the tomatoes, mozzarella cheese, which they make from the milk of a water buffalo, so it's called mozzarella di bufala, and basil, so that you get the red, white, and green colors of the Italian tricolor flag. I would say margherita is probably the most popular pizza there, but you can get it anywhere. You can just go in and pick up a slice and walk along the street. And Neapolitans love street food. I don't think I mentioned in the article, they like to fry up little things too, like different kinds of vegetables and fish, and you can just sort of buy a little bag of beautifully crisp fried street food and just cheese fried and walk around. I mentioned your former president, Mr. Clinton, who was a bit of a fast food fan, I understand, in his own country. He loved Naples, and one of the things he really liked about it was the street food.
Well, Peter, it's getting on lunchtime, and it just
right,
so happens
we're talking about food,
right? And it just so happens that one of the local pizza places, the owner is from Naples, and I think I'm going to head on over there after we finish the show.
I've inspired you. Does he deliver to Toronto, right?
Well, I don't know, but maybe we could fly one up there one of these fine days.
We have a few here that are pretty good too.
That's good.
I have to say that eating a piece of pizza, margarita pizza with the mozzarella di bufala and a nice cold beer or a glass of wine in Italy, followed by in Naples, followed by a coffee. You can't really beat it. It's the whole experience.
Sounds divine.
Many levels of experience.
Peter, thank you, and we thank you for all the contributions you make to the show. We really appreciate it. And it's always wonderful chatting with you. We're going to run, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Enjoy your pizza.
Thanks. Bye for now.
Talk to you later.
Well, he thinks I'm kidding. There is a pizza place right down there, and they do that type of pizza. So we've got to run, and you're listening to Talking Travel live on the Travel Talk Radio Network and worldwide at TTRN.com. You can check out our program schedule by going to TTRN.com for the latest guest information. Next week, Evan Eggers, Ted Flett, Marilyn Downing, Johnny Jett,